Live from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California, Information Radio on the road. Now, here is your host, Norm Schrein.
Well, good evening, everybody. And we are in Simi Valley, California, which is in Ventura County, where the sun is still up and the weather is warm. And with me, I have Carol. And Carol, I know we have butchered your last name on the promos. Can you give me your last name?
Be happy to. It's Carol Kohei.
Carol Kohei. And you are with the Reagan Museum. And of course, there's also a spy museum here, which I didn't realize as well. Can you tell me just, in a couple quick seconds or so, what all the museum encompasses here?
You're talking about the museum itself or the spy exhibit?
Let's go to the museum itself, the Ronald Reagan Museum.
The museum itself on Ronald Reagan is devoted to the president's life and the times that he lived in, beginning with his auspicious beginnings there in Illinois with his birth and moving through the presidency and his time in Hollywood and all sorts of, you know, wonderful and interesting things and places and people that he met.
And one of the things I noticed in going through the museum, and you have, there's all different sections, you know, his childhood home and how he grew up and being a football player and winning a letter on the team. It was football and one other sport, I believe, that he won letters in. And then it goes on to his being a candidate and the governor of California, and of course through the years of the presidency and all the things that went on there. And a lot of interactive exhibits here as well.
Yes, in 2011 we marked the president's, what would have been his 100th birthday. We renovated the library to really engage our visitor in the president's his life and the times that he lived. And you can actually act in a movie with the president. He made over 50 films for Warner Brothers. Then you can go on and you can give your inaugural speech behind the podium reading the teleprompters. You can then go into the White House years and design your own White House state dinner. Then in the Air Force One, of course, we have some great things to see there in the pavilion that houses not only the aircraft that flew 7 United States presidents throughout the world, but also a Marine One helicopter.
And we are sitting literally under the nose of Air Force One, and behind us is the Marine One helicopter, and there's also a motorcade exhibit in here. President Reagan had a pretty good relationship with Mikhail Gorbachev. I think after the Cold War phase kind of ran down. However, it started out a little differently when he delivered these few words.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Now that was probably before their great friendship, but I noticed that particular soundbite is playing on something in the museum here as well. So are we able to talk about the Cold War years? I mean, how he worked his way through that?
There's a real interesting kind of behind the scenes, because President Reagan, from the very inception upon his inauguration, began writing to each one of the Soviet leaders and asking for a meeting, trying to de-escalate the nuclear arms race. And it took him a few. They all kept dying on him. And finally, when he wrote to Mikhail Gorbachev, he then found a man who also wanted to do the same thing, was to de-escalate the arms race and then talk about having peace. And of course, President Reagan's, his main thrust was peace through strength.
And it was also peace by being able to outspend your opponents.
That too.
Yes, and he did a good job at that. Well, you know, Mr. Reagan actually started in radio back in Dixon, Illinois. Well, not in Dixon, but actually in Iowa, where he started. And he worked for two radio stations. One was a sports announcer. And that may have helped him in his advancement to being an actor and whatnot. And he was also a bit of a jokester. Had a lot of jokes up his sleeve, it seems like. And even in the presidential debates, when he had this line to say.
I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience.
So he knew when to pull the jokes out of the pot, so to speak.
Yes, he was a very seasoned professional when it came to using, you know, quotes, parables, stories to really engage his audience and get them to understand his point of view.
And that probably had a lot to do with his acting career.
It did.
And he started out, there's lots of programs. He was in, did a lot of Westerns with the General Electric Theater he hosted. Can you give us some background on some of the things he did in his acting career? As far as, played in movies, right? He was a movie actor, and he played in a lot of, one was a Navy piece, and some pieces that he did during World War II as promotional pieces for the government during World War II.
Yes, he was involved in doing training films. He was not able, because of his eyesight, he was not able to go into battle, so to speak, and so he was in the home front helping in whatever way he could, but he was in the Army, and he did, you know, assist in that way.
And so let's discuss Reagan. The one main reason why he wasn't able to go overseas was he was nearsighted, right?
That's correct.
So I never really knew that, you know, and there's a lot of things that you can find out about the man that you may have never known, especially if you were not alive when he was president. The generation now of a lot of young people you have coming through here, and I see you have people from, looks like, all across the world coming through the museum here as well.
We do. We have people from all the continents, I think except Antarctica, that come through here and enjoy and get to connect with the president and some of his background and the life and times that he was in. In the 1980s, you know, we had high unemployment, high gas prices, we had terrorism, and how he dealt with those connects now with a lot of people.
And people I see coming through sometimes might have been from countries that had been former adversaries.
We've had people come because we have a section, a 10-foot section of the Berlin Wall, and we do have people from the countries before that wall came down that actually come in and kiss the wall because they're just so happy and grateful that the president, as you mentioned in that earlier soundbite, you know, made that stand and made that comment.
Now we're going to leave the man for a little bit, and we'll get back to some of the things here at the museum, but let's talk a little bit about the spy exhibit, which I didn't realize it was here. That's not a permanent exhibit? Or?
No, it is not. It is a traveling exhibit. It came to us from the East Coast, and we've reassembled, you know, the parts here. It actually talks about a lot of the items are from the Cold War, and some of, you know, a few more modern ones, but of course there are a lot of secrets that cannot be revealed, so we don't have any of those here. But I kind of call it low-tech spy information given in a very high-tech and interactive way. There's a real way that they engage the people that come through the exhibit. There's hundreds of items that have been collected and are on display.
And a lot of interesting items, too, and especially a lot of the gadgets that they used. I didn't realize that they were hiding coded text inside digital photos, which was kind of interesting.
They have one of the very first drones, which is actually a firefly. They have a fish that swam around and had a camera. And, of course, we have from World War II carrier pigeons that were spy pigeons as well. And we have a lot of fun things for the kids to do. We have a laser maze that's proved very, very popular. And, of course, spies, they have to kind of, you know, get into buildings kind of in a secret way. So for the kids also, we have ductwork that they can crawl through and pretend that they're a spy. And there's actually coded, you know, spy words throughout the exhibit that as you go through, you have to pick up the clues. And the last gallery, you then figure out what the clues mean.
Now, how long will that traveling exhibit be here at the Reagan Library?
That exhibit will be here through March 9th, 2014.
Okay, so there's still plenty of time to get out here and with Ohio weather being what it is in January and February and March and December, for all that matter, that would be a good time to come out here. Today, we're looking at clear skies. Temperature, last time I checked, was low 70s. So that's not bad by any comparison for Ohio weather, where I think the temperature is in the 40s and 50s today.
And, of course, we're 20 miles from the ocean. So as you stand on the west side of our property, we have 300 acres here. You get a chance to see the islands out you know, to the ocean, the western side, and the president's memorial site, his grave site, is located there. So he gets to have those great views during his remaining time.
Why did they pick this particular spot?
Well, the president was offered a number of spots. He narrowed it down to about eight. His, he had looked up north and he looked down south, and he was offered 100 acres of land from two developers. He actually landed his helicopter over by our visitor lot. There's a small hill there. He looked around, reminded him a lot of his ranch that he used to own in Santa Barbara, Rancho de Cielo. And he saw that. He was off the helicopter a couple of minutes, and he says, "This is it. This is the spot." And they started digging and changing the face of Simi Valley forever.
Well, Simi Valley, driving through, it looks like there's a lot of new stuff here.
There is.
Was it kind of a sleepy little town before the museum started? Or?
It was. We actually were a very hot spot for Hollywood. We did a lot of filming here. The old Dukes of Hazzard, Little House on the Prairie. In fact, we're on the west side of the valley. On the east side, we are actually what I call B-grade movie westerns were all done. Corriganville was over there, and which unfortunately burned in the 1970s, so it's no longer around. But a lot of your old Gunsmoke and, you know, the 1960 type TV shows and movies, Gene Autry, they were filmed quite a bit here.
Well, it's hard to be, you're what are you, maybe 30 miles from Los Angeles or from Hollywood, or not even that?
We're about 30 to 40 miles, yes.
So it's kind of hard to be that close to Hollywood and not be involved in some kind of movie.
That's correct.
Work. So if you're a resident of Simi Valley, you're probably used to seeing different actors and actresses walking around town then.
Well, it's a lot of them like to go to Malibu and the ocean, but we do have quite a few celebrities, no matter what their political stance, do love to come here and wander through, and we will get celebrities from time to time.
Now, as far as folks wandering through and celebrities and so forth, do you end up like knowing in advance that they're going to come, or do they just show up, or both?
Both. Yeah, okay. Some, depending upon their notoriety, will call us ahead. And a lot of other ones come incognito. They'll be wearing, you know, a ball cap and a sweatshirt, and we never know who they are unless someone recognizes them.
So that's kind of an interesting aspect. How about political dignitaries? Do you get those folks coming through here as well?
We do, and they do call ahead, and we do, you know, greet them and make them feel, you know, special.
Well, I remember, of course, watching President Reagan's funeral on television. That was all the ceremony and whatnot was here at the museum. He knew about this museum, and he probably has been through it, right, before he died?
Yes. Each president has to design their funeral, let's say, so that it's all laid out as they're leaving office. So he knew that his passing, would be something that needed to be taken care of because of all what I call the moving parts of something like that. But yes, the Simi Valley people and Washington, D.C. were all involved in how this went together.
Now let's talk a little bit about the room that we're sitting in here. Like I mentioned, we're sitting under the nose of Air Force One. Now we have an Air Force One in Dayton as well. It was JFK's plane, the one that brought him back to Washington from Dallas. This is a 707, I believe, and I haven't been up that far, but are you able to walk through the plane and see it, or is it off-limits as far as that goes?
Oh, not at all. It is a 707. It went into service in 1972 with President Richard Nixon, and it served seven United States presidents. President Reagan used it the most out of everyone. When they took it out of service, President Reagan, you know, asked if he could have it here. He was far enough thinking that he wanted people to see, you know, more of the presidential trappings, as it were. And so we brought it here in 2005, opened it to the public. They can walk through the interior of the aircraft. And just recently, the Marine One helicopter, we've fixed it and opened it up so that people can now walk through Marine One and see how the president would travel in both ways.
And you also have a motorcade behind us here, which has the presidential limo and the police car and the motorcycles and, I guess, a Secret Service vehicle.
That is the Secret Service actually presented that chase car to Mrs. Reagan several years ago.
So that's an actual limousine that President Reagan used?
That is correct.
So, well, it's like any other car. After you run it for a while, you got to find a home for it somewhere.
And it's bulletproof, so I mean, there's maybe a little bit of a less call for that.
Well, yeah, not everybody needs a bulletproof car, and probably the gas mileage wouldn't be very good either. The Marine One Now, was that how many presidents did that go through?
That I don't know, but it is a Johnson-era helicopter. President Reagan's Marine One helicopter just recently came out of service, and so it's on our wish list. Maybe one of these days we'll be able to have one that President Reagan actually used, because different helicopters were used, just like you have the other, Air Force One. There always was two.
Now, of course, on the Marine helicopter, I see you can go and get your picture taken going up into the helicopter. Maybe there's other photo opportunities here. So if you forget to bring your camera or whatever, there you can certainly get a photo snapped of yourself here in the museum.
Of course. We're any museum. We have lots of photo opportunities here for you to take home as souvenir.
And the other thing I noticed that I thought was very nice were the docents seemed to be very helpful, helping you find your way around, or if you have any questions. Now, are these folks, are these volunteers or paid staff, or how does that work?
Well, we're very, very lucky because we are one of the few museums that are open 7 days a week. We're only closed 3 days a year, and our docents help make that possible. We have over 400 volunteers that take an extensive amount of training. It takes at least 6 months of training and testing to get through our docent program, and then they give hundreds of hours here to the library because they really enjoy the folks that come here.
And as we mentioned earlier, you're having people coming from all around the world to see the library and the exhibits. And do you have any unusual stories from folks coming around to see the...
Oh, there's always different stories and different things that happen here, I have to tell you. Every day is a different day, and we just enjoy the folks that come here. Like I said, we have people that would come and kiss the wall, and every day we have people that come up and say, we wish his voice were still here, and we could still hear his voice.
Well, actually, we've I'm glad you mentioned that. We so happen to have his voice. This is a piece I found on the internet. I'm sure the music was not behind it when... Well, actually, we'll get them in. First, I want to do this one that he has, another one of his jokes, the story. I'm not quite sure where he told this one. I titled it Russian Driver, so here we go.
Less than one family out of seven in the Soviet Union owns an automobile. Most of the automobiles are driven by the bureaucrats. The government furnishes them and drivers and so forth. So an order went out one day to the police that anyone caught speeding, anyone, no matter who, gets a ticket. Well, Gorbachev came out of his country home, his dacha. He was late getting to the Kremlin. There was his limousine and driver waiting. He told the driver to get in the back seat. He'd drive, and down the road he went. They passed two motorcycle cops. One took out after him. And pretty soon he's back with his buddy, and his buddy says, well, did you give him a ticket? And he said, no. Well, he said, why not? Oh, he said, to him, important. Well, he said, we're told to give anybody a ticket, no matter who it is. Oh, he said, no, this one was too, I could. Well, he said, who was it? He said, I couldn't recognize him, but his driver was Gorbachev.
Okay, so he's able to poke a little fun at his buddy, Mr. Gorbachev. But the one that I was looking for, let me find it here. Like I said, it had some music behind it. Oh, here it is. I don't think the music was part of the speech. I don't know if you know where this speech came from. It's called A Soldier's Pledge. I don't know if that rings a bell with you or not. It runs 57 seconds long, if that's right. No, sorry. That was the last one. I got to get to the... This one will give you a second to rest. This runs 3.5 minutes long, but... it kind of shows, I think, his belief in the men and women and his understanding of the sacrifices that they have to give. And this is, I'm sure he gave it this at a speech someplace that did not have the music behind it that we're about to hear now.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land... We unleash the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth. The price for this freedom at times has been high, but we have never been unwilling to pay that price. those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. Each one of those markers is a monument to the kind of hero I spoke of earlier. Their lives ended in places called Belleau Wood, the Argonne, Omaha Beach, Salerno, and halfway around the world on Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Porkchop Hill, the Chosin Reservoir, and in 100 rice paddies and jungles of a place called Vietnam. Under one such marker lies a young man, Martin Treptow, who left his job in a small town barbershop in 1917 to go to France with the famed Rainbow Division. There on the Western Front, he was killed trying to carry a message between battalions under heavy artillery fire. We're told that on his body was found a diary. On the flyleaf, under the heading My Pledge, he had written these words: America must win this war. Therefore, I will work, I will save, I will sacrifice, I will endure. I will fight cheerfully and do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended on me alone. We must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. It is a weapon our adversaries in today's world do not have. It is a weapon that we as Americans do have. Let that be understood by those who practice terrorism and prey upon their neighbors. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Okay, and while that was playing, Carol remembered where part of this actually is in one of your theaters.
Yes, it's in what we call the Threat Theater. President Reagan had to deal with a few despots and dictators in his time, and this was his stand against communism. And so this is one of the speeches that he made in showing his cause in defeating communism.
Okay. So you recognize that last piece of it.
Correct.
And there are multiple theaters here. And there's one right as you come in to the Reagan display area, and then there's a couple others I know throughout the display that you can rest for a minute and watch maybe a 3-minute video.
When we renovated the library in 2011, one of the things we wanted to do and were focused on was hearing the president's voice. We just felt people really responded to that, and we really wanted to have that kind of ever-present. And so throughout the museum, there are several videos and places where you can sit and listen to a particular speech or a video that would engage your interest. And one of those in the Threat Theater is our longest one. It's 6 minutes long, but it really starts with the end of World War II up until the fall of the wall, and kind of gives a really great history lesson on the whole thing of communism and the building of the wall.
Well, I imagine with people's time constraints that you have to keep these videos fairly short then.
Yeah, most of the other ones are anywhere from 3 minutes approximate in length.
Now, I want to switch gears again slightly and talk about some of the other amenities that are here at the museum. And one of the great places I found is where you can eat.
We actually have two places to eat because we definitely want to keep the strength and the energy level up because we are a 200,000 square foot museum. And we have a main cafe with a hot grill. It serves lunch style food and you get the great views out to the west of the Pacific Ocean. And the other one is in the middle of our museum, and it's an actual pub that President Reagan visited in Ireland in Ballyporeen in 1984. When we heard they were closing it, we bought it lock, stock, and beer tap, and we reassembled it here in the Air Force One Pavilion. Now it has a smaller selection of food items, mainly cold salads and sandwiches, but you get that kind of Irish feel, and you get a great chance to kind of sit for a second, get your strength to continue on and just to visit the rest of the museum.
The pieces that's missing is the Guinness and the... what, the Carling, right? that's not served in there.
We right? do have beer, but I don't know if we serve Guinness and Carling.
Okay, well then, for those of you that need a beer halfway through the day, through the tour, you can come down, sit down here.
Or some nice wine.
And just outside of us, there's a large deck. I don't know, do they ever put tables out there to sit outside and eat? Or?
We do. It's called the Ambassador's Terrace, and we do put tables out there. However, Simi Valley is kind of windy. It has a tendency to get a little bit windy out there, so sometimes, and of course, if you're familiar at all with California, once the sun goes down, it gets a little brisk and cool here. So, and of course, this pavilion is facing east, which then gets a little cooler in the afternoon, so we don't normally put a lot of tables out there because it does get a little too cool in the California afternoon.
And right now, of course, we have bright sunshine. Back in Dayton, of course, right now it's bright darkness, and the days are short. And of course, it gets light here very early in the morning here now when you're on standard time, like 6 something in the morning.
That's right.
Yes. But it also gets dark very early.
Yeah, so. But when I'm going home at night, I have my headlights on in my car.
So, are you you're a resident of Simi Valley? Were you a resident here before this started, or did you come to be part of the Reagan Library experience?
I moved here in 1981, so about 10 years before the library opened. So I was here for the building, but I did not become an employee until 2004. I actually was a volunteer here myself, beginning in 2002. So I basically have been involved with the library for a little over a decade.
And being the volunteer back in 2002, I see Mr. Reagan died in, 2004?
That's correct.
So did you get to meet him or Nancy Reagan in your time here?
I've met Mrs. Reagan several times, but President Reagan in the late 1990s, the Alzheimer's claimed a lot of his ability to move around and come to the library, which he truly loved. A lot of the docents who were here in the early years said that the president would come and would just have the most fun with the guests here. And let me just give a little anecdotal story. We have a true replica of the Oval Office as it was in President Reagan's time. And the docents would tell us that when President Reagan in the early years, when he would come here, the chair that sits behind the Oval Office desk is the one he used 8 years as governor and 8 years as president. He would go into the Oval Office and kind of set himself down in that old chair of his and kind of get feeling, you know, what it was like again for him to relive those days. And can you imagine as you'd come around the corner and then enter the Oval Office and there is a living, breathing President Reagan sitting in that chair behind the Oval Office? What a thrill it must have been for our visitors.
I imagine. I think he must have been a very approachable person. I know years ago when he was governor of California and we were taking a tour up in Sacramento and I took a tour of the Capitol building and walked into the governor's office and whatnot and just looking around and the secretary there said, oh, well, the governor's in a meeting, but if you wait around here a couple minutes, he'll be glad to meet you. And we said, no, we didn't want to bother him. Probably should have waited to meet him, but we didn't do that. But I can't imagine most state governors wanting to come out and just meet whoever comes wandering through their office.
Well, the president came from humble Midwest, as your listeners probably are aware of, beginnings, and he really felt in tune with the people. I mean, he was a movie star, but he wasn't a movie star until his, you know, mid-20s, late-20s. So he got a chance to be a real person for a lot of years and didn't become governor, you know, till much later. So he definitely identified, you know, with the common man. And when he was here at the library, he definitely would go out through the museum and talk to people and get their stories. We have here in one of the galleries where the governor's ears are a great, what we call his book of quotes, because he was a great reader, voracious reader, and he would take stories and quotes and he would mark them down and he would use those as you, a lot of the sound bites that you have been using, and he'll pull those to make his speeches, you know, more meaningful.
And you had mentioned about the Oval Office and the president sitting there, and that just happened to bring up another perfect antidote story that he had to tell.
The story was an American and a Russian arguing about their two countries, and the American said, "Look, in my country, I can walk into the Oval Office, I can pound the president's desk and say, 'Mr. President, I don't like the way you're running our country.'" And the Russian said, "I can do that." The American said, "You can?" He says, "Yes. I can go into the Kremlin, to the General Secretary's office, pound his desk and say, 'Mr. General Secretary, I don't like the way President Reagan's running his country.'"
So, like I say, he, I mean, he had a very important job, but he seemed to be able to look at the light side of a lot of that job as well. And we are approaching the 6:30 hour. It's probably time. I wanted to ask you if there's anything in particular that maybe I didn't ask you that I should have asked you with regards to the Reagan Library.
You've been...
Well, the library is such an interesting place. I have to admit, we've had people from, like you mentioned, all over the world. And if you look on Yelp and some of the other... social media sites. It's really incredible to look and read some of the writings from young people, because we, like you were saying, a lot of these young people were not around when the president was in the presidency. But to hear what they say and what they feel about the library, it's really brings a real nice, warm feeling to know that we're getting, you know, information out. History is still alive here at the Reagan Library, and that people of all ages can enjoy what we have here.
Well, Carol, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day to speak with me today. And again, we are at the Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. You can get more. I'm sure there is a web page.
Oh, we do. It's very easy to find, of course, at the www.reaganlibrary.com. We have all sorts of great information, quotes of the day, and we have coming soon a Reagan Library app. So a lot of great ways to get information.
All right. Thank you, Carol, for taking time to speak with me today. And thank you all for listening to Information Radio on the Road. And don't forget that we will be having Sinclair basketball, I believe it's this Wednesday the 5th. So check our webpage for that. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again from Information Radio on the Road.
You've been listening to Information Radio on the Road, live from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. You can listen to this program again by going to our website at www.1610.info and clicking on the link for Information Radio on the Road. Thanks for listening.